What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of the Spring Legend Podcast. My name is Hunter Ferrier, and today I'm sitting down with what many would consider to be an icon in the turkey woods. It's a good episode. It's one that I look forward to recording for some time. My buddy Blake had hollered at me over the past probably 2 years talking about lining something like this up, and finally got time to make it happen. I'm going to sit down with a fella whose hand I had long wanted to shake, and it was well worth the hour or two drive over there, getting to see some stuff and hear some stuff from Mr. George Mayfield. And we're going to dive into everything from stories to stuff he's learned along the way. And it's pretty jam-packed. I mean, we might have split this joker into two episodes. I'm not sure yet. But it was worth the while, and I want to jump right into it. Before we do that, I want to touch on a few updates and keep them pretty brief for you. One that our DMs have seemed to blown up on over the past week or so, it kind of concerns something that we pre-released over at Nashville at the NWTF convention, the Woodsman series of shirts and pants that we have long awaited their arrival. We just got notification a day or two ago that they're going to be here supposedly on Thursday, so all the pre-orders will be shipping out Friday morning, and on Friday at midnight they will go live on the website springlegion.com. It's a project we've worked on for about a year or so, I'd say, and I think it's going to be well worth the time and effort that we've poured into making these some good and high quality turkey hunting apparel, and it's something that I'm personally looking forward to getting out there into the public. If you want more info on that, head over to springlegion.com and check it out. We got links and all that good stuff there. And if you listen to this after Friday, go check it out, and you might be able to purchase one. We appreciate you listening. Once you sit down, listen to some of the advice and nothing short of wisdom with Mr. Blake Dial and Mr. George Mayfield.
It's a lifestyle, mm-hmm. You know, no doubt. I was blessed. You know, I never did worry about how my life was going to turn out. I mean, I wondered, but as far as, oh, golly, I need to do this or that, I never just seemed like it was going to work out. And, you know, the concept of me, my dad kind of taught me a valuable lesson one summer. I was first year in college and didn't do that well in school. And my dad was a research chemist for Shell Oil. And he said, well, you know, you need to come on back to New Orleans. It's hot in New Orleens in the summertime. you need to come on back. Now, I'm going to hook you up, get you a job out here at the plant. And it turned out he did. And I made some pretty good money that summer. But I didn't know what I was going to get to do. And I worked in the mixing plant, which is a big metal building that, I don't think I ever went to the far end of it. It was so big. And you'd get there just about to crack a day in the morning, and they'd close those big steel doors. I don't know why the hell they closed that place up. It was like an oven anyway. And it was dark in there, and it was smelled of grease and oil. And anyway, I got to work at the end of a conveyor, where 5 gallon buckets of oil would come off there about as fast as you could grab them. And I got to stack pallet after pallet after pallet all day long. That was interesting. I did that the whole summer. And I really did better in school that fall. I mean, I'm serious. I thought, holy crap. There's no way. And it wasn't the job, and it wasn't the people, because I was strong. I was a lot stronger after that. But it was the idea of being confined in that building. It was like almost like a prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so my life has been more about me knowing what I didn't want to do than what I did want to do. I knew I didn't want to do that or anything like that the rest of my life. So it was just from then on, it was pretty easy to follow a course of least resistance and what I had aptitude for. And of course, everybody wanted me to be a doctor because all my family's is about doctors, you know, and my uncle and my aunts and, you know. Anyway, I didn't want to be a doctor. but I love biology, and that's where I ended up. And of course, I did pre-med just to keep my mom and dad happy. But I went on and studied entomology and wildlife and did a graduate. I went Southern Miss undergraduate and LSU in graduate school. And the wildlife, I didn't ever think I was going to end up as a wildlife biologist, and I never got paid as that. I ended up starting a commercial hunting business, and that was the way I stayed out of those metal buildings, you know, and offices and everything else, but...
Well, it looks like it's been a pretty successful career by some of the stories and some of the things I've been able to see in this little the office here. It's one of them things. I know you trust somebody knows a thing or two because they've seen a thing or two, and they can vouch that Mr. George has seen a thing or two, apparently, because I think he knows a thing or two as well.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, years and years and years of doing this, and obviously, there's passion related to it, and then there's a competitive nature that's related to it, and just the aspects and theories and the ever-evolving, you know, ways of, you know, playing a game almost, but it ain't a game. It's hard to explain to folks who don't quite get it, but folks who do get it understand completely that it's something that takes you over. I mean, it's...
Growing up hunting with him, and then all he ever expressed to me more than anything in the world was... Go get your education, go finish your education. And my family that I'm from, love my family, got a great family. Nobody in my family has ever been to college.
Really?
Yeah. No male in my family has ever been. And Mr. George said, if you want to be able to hunt, if you want to be able to hunt for the rest of your life, you know, and do these things that you get to see and the things that he got to do, you know, and just –
But first of all, I wanted him to if he wanted to be the hunter, complete hunter, then I knew from experience that you need to understand the bird, especially when we're talking about turkeys or the deer. You need to be able to understand the biology of the critter you're after. And so many turkey hunters these days that I've met, young, old and in between, they really don't understand the behavior, the ecology, the how the bird lives, what makes him tick in terms of his behavior in particular. And just having that education was the way that I was able to gave me the basis to put all that experience that I was getting every morning together to understand how to be consistent in hunting the turkey. Without that, I would have struggled. Now, of course, I had a mentor that was as well known as anybody around this part of the country, Ben Ezell. Ben Ezell was good friends with Ben Lee, and everybody's probably heard of him. And they gave the first turkey calling seminars and schools or whatever at Westervelt Lodge back in the 70s. And anyway, that's Gulf State's hunting lodge. It's about 14,000 acres on the Tom Bigby River right outside of Aliceville. But Ben, well, he was a natural-born turkey killer. I mean, he understood it. He understood the bird. And he didn't go to college, but he was so perceptive, so intelligent, and he pretty much self-taught. And that's a hard way to learn anything. I mean, he would tell me about times when they would go, he said that he went a whole season and never heard a bird gobble. I don't know how much of that's true, but I don't think I'd made it past the first week, but I mean, I'm spoiled, I guess. but anyway, you know, he he ran in a pretty tough crowd, and he killed a lot of turkeys when most people didn't think there was any. You know, they had, and you're talking about, you know, we're on the radio and TV and all that talking about all our turkey hunting secrets. Ezell was completely different. He was tight-lipped. And he said if he found a track or a feather or something like that, he didn't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Kept out in his back pocket.
I mean, you know, and so times have changed, of course. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me one time about how hard it was to learn about the turkey because everybody was an expert back then. And hell, they had never killed one. You know, I mean, the truth be known, and if they had killed one, it was on a deer drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And somebody flushed it over them, you know, and they shot it with a buckshot and a shotgun, you know. But, you know, listening to him tell his tales is really how I learned and got over that hump we're talking about. I mean, it's a learning curve. If you don't, you know, I grew up in New Orleans. I'm not from New Orleans, but that's where I grew up. Went to high school. We didn't have many turkeys down there, you know. And so I was 21 years old before I killed my first turkey. And I was struggling. And I came up to Aliceville, met Ben, little Ben, actually, his son, got to be good friends with him. And Ben, he sort of like me and Blake, and we just hit it off, you know. And I guess he felt sorry for him. I don't know what he felt, but I mean,
that's kind of how I feel sometimes.
That's how y'all know each other too.
But I ended up with a nickname. I was up in New York hunting with Ben Lee and Ezell and some other guys that hunted with Ben Lee, and I was kind of the boy, and they started calling me Opie. That was my nickname. Hey, Ope, go get me a beer. You know? Ope, go get the firewood, you know, and that kind of stuff. And I kind of liked it. I said, hell, I'm in. You know? We're sitting in my office now, and there's a megaphone.
I saw that.
Right there. Well, that came from my wife and I pick a lot, go to these antique places, and she saw it and then bought it. But when I was up in New York that first time, the afternoon, I don't think we didn't hunt the afternoons, and but we'd go riding and roosting turkeys. And there was a lot of beer involved in that. And I was a designated driver. And we'd go riding these New York back then. I don't know what it's like now. I hadn't been there in a while. Blake has. You've been up there recently. We were hunting Belfast, New York, not too far from Olean. It was Amish country. It was rolling hills, dairy-like fields. And what was interesting about that, my first time I was up there, all their conifers, the pines, grew low, and hardwoods grew up on top of the hills.
Yeah, you know? Cross back.
Right. Yeah, completely backwards. But when we would go roost turkeys in the afternoon, Gary, the guy that owned the camp there, and David, they had this megaphone. And Ben Lee would get out, and he'd call on that megaphone. Ezell would get out. I mean, you talk about light the woods up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it did real good.
That's pretty cool.
And the one that we could barely hear that was across the little stream in the bottom and up on the next mountain, that's the one they gave me. Go get that one, Ope. They took the close ones. But that was, I think I'm going to try that megaphone issue.
Yeah. When we walked in the door earlier, I was looking at it. I was like, where does that come from? Because I ain't seen
that.
That
ain't always
yet.
Been
that's
here.
That's a new one. Yeah. It's an addition, but I've been thinking about those old days. And Maybe we'll have an opportunity up in Missouri or something like that to use that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
I don't know how that goes.
Yeah. You can put it up to your ear and listen.
Hey, that ain't a bad idea either. Block the wind out, yeah.
But yeah, George helped me get over the educational side of things and press me to go to Mississippi State and get that wildlife degree, and I did, and it was the single-handedly best thing I did as far as the wild turkey goes. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, that and a lot of other things, too. I've met so many people I wouldn't have met without it, but that in particular, though, obviously we did it. I did it for the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my love of the turkey, thanks to him, was hard pressed, and I don't think he would have been satisfied. I don't think I'd be here with him today if I wouldn't have gone and got it.
Well, you gained my respect because I don't know if you remember or not. We were sitting. I think I took you to Missouri
on the golf cart that morning, and it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, okay, yeah. You know, and he had gone to East Mississippi over here and finished a 2-year degree in forestry, and I think you took a semester off or something like that. You didn't go
almost
year.
2 years.
Oh, that okay. Yeah. All right, my memory fails me a
lot. Well, it flies.
More.
It goes. It went fast.
And, but it had been weighing on me pretty heavy, and Blake's like one of my boys, you know. And we were sitting there that morning. Had a beautiful morning. I think I just missed one off the golf cart. I yet went up on the golf cart and missed him. I don't know what.
Oh, yeah. Let's say that. Okay.
All right. I jumped in and said this before he did, you know.
Yeah.
Tell
okay.
that story on
it's
me.
Backwards. The only turkey I've ever seen this man miss was that day. And that was, it was very sudden.
I shot over it. but anyway, we're sitting there, you know, and had a great morning. And I just looked at him and I asked him, I said, what you afraid of?
Mm-hmm. I remember it like it was yesterday. Man. I mean, and that was in and 17, I think is when it was.
I knew you was afraid because I was too. And, you know, and basically what he said, he was afraid of failing. And I was too. And, you know, I understood, but hell, you can always come home, you know, and you really made me proud. You went over and did real good in school, but you learned something.
A lot.
And you know, that's what my youngest son Alex went to Mississippi State, and he almost didn't go. And I told him, I said, son, you got to get out of this comfort zone you're in. You got to. You're going to be fine one way or the other, but you need to do it because for yourself, because there's so much that you're going to come away with, and it's not all going to be what you're learning at school. It's the people. Mm-hmm. It's the whole essence of the experience that you're going to miss out on. And just like you, just like I did, I had to admit at one point in my life to my parents that I really appreciated their encouragement to finish my education.
No
so,
doubt.
I mean, it's not for everybody, and I'm not trying to I don't, you know, everybody needs to follow their own path. But if you, what I have done is I followed my heart. And my heart was in the woods. My heart was in staying out of those metal buildings and kind of following my own path in life. And, you know, you have to prepare yourself for that. And I think I've never regretted having that education in that regard because I've used it. I've used it more than I would have ever imagined. So anyway, the biology part, and if you've whether you've gone to school or not, if you are struggling with wild turkey, if you have inconsistencies in your ability to kill wild turkeys or yep them up or whatever you're trying to do, then I would suggest that you spend the time and there's plenty of material out there these days where there used to not be. That's what Ezell was telling me. It was hard to learn back then because most of the people that talked about it and they didn't know, and the other people wouldn't say a word.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If they knew what they were doing, they wouldn't tell nobody because turkeys were scarce then.
A sacred thing.
And, I mean, they'd almost been eliminated. I mean, during, you know, the turn of the century, I mean, people ate them, mm-hmm. you know, like deer. And subsistence hunting was like that you see in Africa now. I mean, it's like they killed them all and damn near it. So, but you can learn the biology. There's several. I've got a book right there on my desk right there. I think it's up under that stuff right there, Blake. See if that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everything you ever wanted to know, you know, about the wild turkey. And there's so much research going on these days that's out there that can be, you know, very helpful. A lot of telemetry studies and all kind of stuff, all kind of research.
That's cool.
But
that's the it right there. I'll put it on the camera. But
get the basics. Get the biology. Understand why turkeys do what they do when they do it and why they don't. And that's the best advice I can give anybody.
Check that out.
Honestly. Then the next thing I think what a fellow needs to do is take the whole spring off and turkey hunt every day.
I'm telling you.
All right. People are going, yeah, right. And I get that too. Not everybody's, you know, can do that. Mm-hmm. But the only way you're going to get better at killing turkeys is to sit to a lot of turkeys. Once you have the information and you have a basic understanding of what's going on, then there's never going to be two alike. There's never going to be two situations. You can't cookbook turkey hunting. You have to learn how to handle the variations from day to day. You know, I mean, when you look at the turkey season and you know, opening day, whatever they're doing then, the springs never fall just alike either. So they're at some point of the reproductive progression. You need to be able to identify where they are in the reproductive progression and then stay up with it because every week things are going to change. Mm-hmm.
By the day.
Yeah, really by the day. Yeah. But, I mean, if you get to hunt on the weekends, you go this weekend.
It's not going to be the same
next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and having an appreciation for how their behavior changes from week to week or day to day will have everything to do with your success. You know, when I started guiding, I wasn't really ready to be guiding. I mean, I wasn't experienced enough to be, I mean, I knew more than the guys that I was taking, so I guess that's enough. But as far as being, you know, complete, my education hadn't really begun yet. But I noticed that it didn't take long for the way that the birds responded to me or what they were doing, the habitat they were in, how much it changed. And where I was hunting them and hearing them or not hearing them at the beginning was, heck, it was on the other side of the place in the end of the season, you know. And, I started trying to understand and find out what I needed to be doing, you know, that would work. Coming back without a turkey wasn't an option.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't mean that. I mean, it wasn't me. I had a sport with me. And if I was building my business, and if I wanted to stay in this hunting business, I had to kill turkeys, man. And all this stuff, well, they ain't gobbling, you know. I mean, that don't matter. I mean, to the guy, he's paying money to hunt, and I'm supposed to know what I'm doing. And, well, sometimes we could we could actually call them. Sometimes we couldn't, you know, yeah. Like it or lump it. You know, I mean, that's the way I fed my children. Mm-hmm. But I learned so much. You know, you keep pressing and keep pressing, and you find out where that razor thin edge is of success and failure.
That's right.
You know, I mean, if you're sitting back waiting for everything to come to you, you're gonna kill a couple every year.
Yeah, a couple.
That's what I mean. Mm-hmm. When the turkeys get ready to run over you.
Yeah.
You know, and the rest of it, what you gonna do then? You know.
Yeah, yes. If you get close enough to the turkey and you can hear other sounds of communication that turkeys use, that's when you start to learn things about turkeys that most people aren't going to learn about because they're sitting on a tree 200 yards away from them, and they can't hear the turkey drumming at this little hen that they can't even hear making noises beside them, you know. And it just makes a lot of sense. Once you get up there and you get to where you're listening to them and get tight with turkeys, then you understand you got to put two and two together. I mean, if there's something that's not working here, let's try to get a little closer and see what we can learn. You know,
that brings to mind. I've got a couple of pictures, and actually, Kerry Wicks, he's the one that laid those pictures out there. The first call that I had success with was actually named the Success Call. It was made out of Leeds, Alabama. Anyway, I think Lyle's making some now.
He is, yes.
And I'm the one that I had a call from Ernest Black Jr. is the one that invented that call. And, matter of fact, Mr. Ernest gave me that call and several others. But that particular call, I've never seen a call design like that. And it's the first one I could ever yelp a turkey up with. But before I could run that call, I toted it because I knew one day I probably was going to be able to trick a turkey with it. I mean, this was in the beginning years when I had come to Alabama, but I was still going to school, you know, and I was back and forth. I remember one morning, turkeys were gobbling good that morning, and I didn't hardly know which way to go, but one started gobbling pretty close, and he was on the ground. And I got up there, and I had that call in my coat pocket, and I didn't have enough sense to have a rubber band on it, keep it quiet, and it started making noises, and I got frustrated, and I took it out, and I set it on a stump. And I went on up here and tried to kill that turkey, which I didn't, you know. But that's how much how good a caller I was back in the day. I mean, I'd put my call, you know, lay it down so it wouldn't spook the turkey.
I can relate to that turkey. I can tell you that.
Well, you know, the call is everything in a way. But it's not. I don't know now that I'd really even want to kill one if I hadn't called him up. You know, I mean, I've changed so much, and the turkeys change with us. You know, as we get better at killing them, they get better at not getting killed, and they evolve and they develop patterns of behavior that make it harder to. They don't fall for the hen in the bush trick too much, you know. So. And that's a good thing because, you know, the populations will be sustainable. they evolve. The dead ones die, and the ones that aren't as susceptible to being called will live. And there's a genetic connection to that, too. But for me, you know, the calling part is just, it is so much fun to interact with something so wild. It's such a thrill. Their voices are unique. You want to cut you. Golly, that's cool. You know. but you know, I've said it before to Blake, and I don't know if I've expressed it to a lot of people, but you know what really makes a turkey come? It's not the call.
Silence.
It's the silence.
Mm-hmm.
It's the quiet. You know, I've made this, I've commented, made this analogy many times. You know, you're sitting there and you yelp, and the turkey cuts you, and, you know, you got it going on. You feel like you're getting somewhere, and you're really at that point, you're in a calling contest, and, you know, you get stimulus response going on. And if the turkey chooses to hush on you, well, normally I get my gun up. I get my gun up on my knee because he's coming. You know, he's hushed and he's
moving.
He's easing up there. Or he might be running. Who knows? But, I mean, you know, I get ready, you know. And then you're sitting there and I don't know how patient you are. I'm pretty patient now. Hell, I sit there all day.
He's got all day.
I mean, I've always had all day.
Yeah. Created it for yourself.
I can't name any more important things.
Well, I can, you know, that's one thing that I do, and Blake knows it. He's seen it. I can lock in,
mm-hmm.
intellectually lock in, and I'll be there.
I was telling Hunter, we were over there at that place we hunted the turkey that stayed below the roadbed, mm-hmm. and we didn't know it was there. And and you know, turkey, we sat there for an hour and a half, I know. I mean, we sat there all morning just about, and that turkey stood in the same spot. He gobbled every 30 minutes, and we were like, yep, he's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And he would, if I even tried to make a call, it was too loud, you know. But the scratching.
Swat him.
Yeah. That scratching around up there and us sitting there, and he finally got curious, and next thing you know, that turkey spit, and he was right there. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we called him up.
Yeah, no doubt.
And yeah.
I mean,
we didn't kill the turkey. And
no, because we had never been there before, and we didn't know that he was in a road. Mm-hmm. Had I known that road, we'd been looking down that road. But, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. We yipped that turkey up.
No doubt.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you killed him later on or somebody did over there. But, I mean, yeah, that was, and he went right by us drumming. And,
close.
I mean, he was in gun range the whole time, you know. But, hey, turkey wins mm-hmm. one. That's great. Right. That's great.
That's
I love
we
it.
Sat back like I was telling you. He said, just see if he comes up here.
Yeah.
Hey, and if he don't.
Make it simple, yeah.
Yeah.
If he don't, you know, he'll be here tomorrow.
He either will or he won't.
And the same guy sitting here, George Mayfield, used to run three or four off the limb in the morning before I ever sat down to one. Okay. So. That's the beauty of the sport. Uh-huh. We all have been under the hill
mm-hmm.
looking up at the hump and not knowing any better and still having a great time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I, honest to goodness, Johnny Bishop, Johnny, and he helped me. He did. He taught me a lot. Now, you know, we didn't go a whole bunch, but he was so patient. Ezell was too, but he was less patient than Bishop. And, you know, he got it for me at Carpenter's Lodge, mm-hmm. Johnny did. And, you know, I was at least, when I started in the hunting business, I was at least smart enough to know that I didn't know nothing. And I hired a bunch of old gray-headed turkey murderers to keep me going. But, you know, in that process that we're talking about, silence is mm-hmm. what moves that turkey. But if you're, I'll go back to that because I think it's an important point. If you're making a turkey gobble, and he hushes on you, and you sit there with your gun ready, you know, for 30 minutes, and then you sit there, you sit there an hour, and, you know, I'm looking for the head.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked over to the left or right, and there he is. And I don't know where he come from or how long he's been there, but he's looking dead at me. He got the drop on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm dead. You know? You know, if he doesn't come, what you going to do? You going to stand up, turn around, walk straight back to the truck?
Mm-mm.
Probably not. you can't help it. It's like a magnet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if nothing else, you just want to see where that son of a gun was.
Just look.
I want to see
walk
where,
up yeah, over that.
You're going to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
You might go obliquely, but you're not going to go back.
Mm-mm.
You can't. Unless you just know that land and that turkey so intimately that you just don't want to booger it, you might go, but that's not usually the case. So you're going to move forward. Mm-hmm. Well, he just called your ass up.
Yeah.
And he did it with silence. That's what you got to do. You stimulate the turkey. It's hard to stimulate one that's strutting for six hens. That's that timing thing, that progression we're talking about. Got to know what you're dealing with or what the likelihood of what you're dealing with is based on the time of the reproductive progression that you're hunting, okay? But when you understand that, you know what the percentages are that will work. This will work, highly probable. This might not, or the time of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he henned up still, you know?
Yeah.
The population dynamics, are there a lot of two-year-old satellites running around that's not going to say a word, mm-hmm. but they're going to slip in, you know?
Still be ready for
it. I mean, this understanding of the dynamics of your spot and your birds, not mine, mm-hmm. yours, that's what you need to know. And it gives you the information to make better choices. It's all about your choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the calling a turkey, if you had to make it simple, less is more. Now, I have been in situations where, you know, you had to cut them to the point, all the way to the shot. Mm-hmm. They're just hammering and coming, and that's, you know, it makes you feel like $1 million, you know.
Especially when you got somebody with you that's enjoying.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. And then you act like I wasn't you. Do it all the time.
Yep.
but that's not the reality of it.
Well, but you hit on patience, and this is something that I've kind of come on, and if I'm ever talking to a veteran turkey hunter, one of the it always seems to any kind of advice kind of revolves around the word patience. And for the longest time, I'd really honed in on patience being how long you could sit at a tree without moving. And then the more I kind of progressed through it, I was, and this happened, I'd say probably in the past year or so, I was hunting with somebody and stood there for like 8 minutes just waiting on a turkey to gobble again. We'd heard him a couple of times and hadn't moved, hadn't done anything, and I wanted, you know, his next gobble to be uninfluenced. I didn't want to, you know, move him to make him do something that he would be, you know, not what he would want to do anyway, so to speak. And just waiting and waiting and waiting, and, you know, he was wanting to do something, make him gobble again and whatnot, and I finally got him a mouth to be patient, but I wasn't being patient on waiting. I was being patient on letting him make a move because I don't know what I'm going to do next, you know.
Exactly.
He kept asking,
now that's,
you know.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
The gobbles that you solicit and the gobbles that you don't solicit, they're more telling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can slam that truck door and get a gobble. But if you listen to a turkey gobble on his own, then you can tell more about what you need to do, mm-hmm. than when you're making him gobble. People love to make him gobble. Do it again. You know, make him gobble. Come on. Want to make him gobble? You want to make him come?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to realize that there's a big difference in that. And you know, I like to hear him gobble too, but ultimately you have a narrow window of opportunity to stimulate this turkey, keep him locked in on you, and then entice him to leave his spot. You know, most of the time, if he's on the ground and he's where he wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he might be traveling, going somewhere. And if he is, then you'll probably get a gobble, but you're not going to get him to come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you got to realize that. I've had a few turn around over the years and come back. But a turkey that flies down and he don't say nothing for a long time, you hear him gobble way off, well, you better get your ass up and get on that way, because he probably won't gobble again start gobbling until he gets where he wants to be. And he might hook up with some hens and not gobble much at all. So you need to be over there and be able to read the land and say, well, okay, look, there's a bench up here. You know the land well enough to know, or at least, or have heard other turkeys or him even gobble from these spots. They once they start moving, you know, at first they're pretty. I call them focal points, and this is a whole nother subject, kind of. But turkeys don't live everywhere. I mean, if you got 1,000 acres, there's going to be 250 of it is where spring turkeys are, and pretty much going to gobble from the same basic ridge or whatever they always do. And they're going to end up, you know, in a spot pretty close by that they, you know, will gobble on the ground. It's where they have had success gobbling hens up. And they're all going to hook up. Sometimes it's right there under the tree where they fly down, and sometimes it's not. But they end up in a spot that's a focal point. And a focal point is a place that they can see from, cover their butts, you know, from predators. And, you know, it's just a genetic tendency to see and to be seen and heard. And it's going to be pretty much the same every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you're walking through the woods and you hadn't hunted there much, but you see this little glade or some little natural opening in the woods, and you say, hey, there'll be a rub or two around here. There'll be a scrape right over there, you know, and dang if there isn't. Well, those focal points are pretty much the same, not that they look the same, but they offer the same they have the same qualities. A turkey, he's in a vulnerable position when he's in a full strut. Now, he's got other turkeys around him, and, you know, they're watching out. There's always one hen got her head up, you know, or if he's got a running buddy, there'll be, what I call an old four eyes. He's standing there looking for him, you know, the other one's wound up. But they stay in areas where they can control the surroundings with their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And the hens know where these places are, and they particularly identifiable on up in the morning. If you hear a turkey go to gobbling on, a bench or a hill or something like that regularly, that's how I killed the professor that last day. But anyway, that's a focal point. And they go from these, from one to the next. When they start walking, looking for mm-hmm. trouble, that's mm-hmm. what they do. That one that leaves and he's gone, he's going to he knows where he's going.
Mm-hmm.
You might not know, but he knows where he's going. And if you do know where he's going, heck, you just ease around there and sit down and wait for him to gobble.
Mm-hmm.
I can cut pretty good. I don't yip as good as Blake or a lot of people, but I can cut pretty good. And that's usually how I could make a turkey gobble when I needed a turkey. But I have learned that it's better for me, and I don't claim to be a big-time caller or anything like that, but if I'm going to call to a turkey, I want him to gobble on his own first.
Mm-hmm.
And I cut him. And I just wait. I don't go in there and try to make him gobble up on his focal point. Mm-mm. I know he's in there somewhere, and he's going to gobble. It might be 2 hours from now, but he's going to gobble.
He gets there and gobble.
A crow hit, flies over, something, he's going to gobble. When he does, you know.
Well, that's the natural way of it happening.
Right. Well, there's a hen, and she's coming through and just heard what she wanted to hear, you know. And I guarantee you, he's going to hear me. He might not cut me. He might. Most of the time he does. But, I mean, but it's on then.
Oh,
on.
Yeah.
You know.
Thank God.
When I don't say another word until he... I get ready, but I don't say another word till he gobbles. Sometimes I make it so go and gobble 3 or 4 times before I go. Well, no, no.
Quiet off on him.
You know, I mean, you know, and that way, being a poor caller has a lot. You know, it's kind of taught me to be judicious with my calling. I'm not on the stage, and I ain't trying to get no trophy. I come on over here. Yep. I'm over here, and I ain't trying to impress him. I'm just trying to yep him up.
Let him know.
That's right.
And, you know, and so a lot of that stuff might seem antithesis, but I mean, people make these videos from the very beginning. They get the turkey up there, and they milk them.
Right.
They're... You know, you go, I saw what's his name, and he called at him right there and made him gobble. Yeah, he's milking the turkey. He's already got him up there, and he's got the gun on him. He's just trying to make him make TV. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, yeah, he struts more, and he gobbles more, and all that, you know, dumb two-year-old. But, I'd have gone broke, you know, if it wasn't for the two-year-olds.
All right, guys, appreciate y'all listening to round one of some turkey hunting conversations with Mr. George Mayfield and our buddy Blake Dow. Going to have to split this one up into two. Fortunately, I say that. Got a chance to sit down and dive into these stories, and, of course, we're going to dive down some rabbit holes and stuff like that. So want to say appreciate y'all listening, and keep an eye out, keep an ear out for part two, as we dive into a little bit more in depth into some tactic stuff and Lord knows some storytelling. So it's just as good as part one. If you enjoyed it, we appreciate the rating, review, all that good stuff. And if you tell a friend, share it on your socials, that's an added bonus. We certainly appreciate them. Again, we'll sign off on this one, and we'll see you on the next one here in, I'd say, an hour or two.